They brought out a dark hour's meal for the latecomers, and heard their story, a free-form recounting, to be sure, made somewhat random by the way Jaina, Kip, and Lobaka tended to interrupt one another with corrections and elaborations, of the days the three had spent on Hapes. Wedge, acting more or less as master of ceremonies for the meal, brought in one more participant. Luke was startled to see Jag Fell enter the chamber. Fell was a tall, wiry young man with close-cropped black hair, a scar running from his right eyebrow upward and then being echoed in a white lock of hair. He was Wedge's nephew and, not surprisingly, a brilliant pilot, having inherited reflexes from both the Antilles and Fell families, and having been raised among the militaristic blue-skinned Chiss, among whom his parents had chosen to live. Luke had been aware that Jag had been on Hapes with Jaina, but thought he'd departed from there for distant regions of space. So the Yuuzhan Vong are clustered around Hapes, but Tenelka is in charge there as queen, Luke summarized. Some good, some bad. Even with her fleet so badly reduced and her danger so close, Hapes could be a strong ally for us. I suspect Tenelka will offer us help once she has things sorted out there. Wedge, focused on Jaina, asked, So, what are your plans now? You're still on Rogue Squadron's reserve roster, but your situation is unique, so I'm not going to call you up for duty if you and Luke feel you'll be more useful elsewhere. Jaina looked around. I'd like to form a new starfighter squadron if I can put together enough pilots and materiel. Force-based coordination. Luke's eyebrows rose. Sort of like what Jerus Sabaoth did for Thrawn. Jaina shrugged. I'm not talking about ancient history. I'm talking about now. She glanced around at the winces and dark looks she received from everyone present who was over the age of 30. She offered up a calm smile. The Yuuzhan Vong think that I'm associated somehow with Yun Harla, their goddess of trickery. I'd like to play up on that. And this means coming up with methods of trickery, or what seems like trickery to them. That means the Force to me. The Force, and maybe the best advice from the best pilots, like Uncle Luke and General Antilles. Wedge considered. I've heard a little about this trickster goddess thing. I think it has real potential for psychological warfare, so I'm inclined to move on this idea. Luke leaned forward. I also think this is something that ought to be done. Anything new we can do to keep the Yuuzhan Vong off balance is worth exploring. And since I have another mission priority now, why don't I just hand command of Twin Suns Squadron over to her? With your approval, Wedge. Jaina's head turned as though it had been snapped around by a Wookiee wrestler. You mean that? I do. And I don't think the symbolism will be lost on the Yuuzhan Vong. Luke Skywalker gives up his personal squadron, a squadron with the word twin in the name. The Vong think that twins have special powers, are smiled upon by the gods, Jag said, his tone low. Good point, Luke said. It was actually named in memory of Tatooine, but they don't know that. I brought in a fighter squadron from Hapes, Jag said. But the notion of learning tactics involving force coordination and playing with the minds of our enemies is an intriguing one. I think I'd like to join your Twin Suns Squadron. I would, too. That was Kip Duran. Wedge didn't bother to conceal his own surprise. You're both sure? About taking orders from a squadron leader with a lot less command experience than you have? Yes, Jag said. I know how to take orders as well as giving them. Kip nodded. I suspect I'd benefit from analyzing and advising for a while instead of leading. If I start to chafe, I can always transfer out. Twin Sun's leader ready, Jaina said. The vibration from her X-Wing's engines, the whine of engines from all over the Special Operations docking bay, cut into her, a familiar and welcome sensation.
Twins 2, ready.
That was Kip.
Going to shield me a goddess. Twins 3, ready.
That was Jag, and as Jaina predicted, he omitted any quip or irrelevant remark.
Record time, ready to lift.
Moments later, they lifted off, two X-Wings and Jag's claw craft comprising a shield trio, with the record time, the troop transport damaged during the taking of Borlaeus and subsequently patched back together, lumbering after them. They lifted toward the starry sky, just starting to blur with dawn, above them. Jaina spared a look out the starboard side of her canopy at Jag's claw craft. This variant form of TIE starfighter had the basic cockpit sphere and twin ion engine pods of classic TIE fighters and interceptors, but from the point the engines met the cockpit emerged four forward-sweeping, talon-shaped solar array wings. Jaina didn't know whether to be pleased or irritated at the artistic incongruity of that style of vehicle being included in her mostly X-Wing squadron, and tried to think as a Yuuzhan Vong goddess would. After a few minutes, long after they'd cleared Borlaeus' atmosphere and were headed to a patch of Pyrian space well away from any naval activities, she keyed her comlink. "Kip, remind me to issue an order that all starfighters in this squadron are to be individually decorated by their pilots. No uniformity. They're astromechs, too."
"Will do, goddess,"
Jag said.
"Coming up on practice zone in 10, 9, 8...
Moments later, the starfighters slowed to a stop relative to distant Borlaeus and hung drifting in space as record time caught up to them. Jaina asked, "How are you going to decorate your fighter, Jag?"
"Black ball,"
he answered immediately.
"The claws the color of steel, with blood-red splashes on them, as though the whole thing were some sort of claw weapon."
"You came up with that just in the time since I decided everyone should decorate their starfighter?"
"No, I decided on this design days ago, when I calculated that you'd be issuing that directive."
"Days ago?" Jaina felt a flash of surprise and irritation. How dare he attempt to predict her in this way? How dare he do it successfully? But she tamped down on the feeling. Jedi Knights needed to be serene. Squadron leaders shouldn't let their pilots get to them. She just smiled. "Well, it's a good design. I approve."
"Thank you."
There was the slightest touch of mockery to his reply, and Jaina felt her mood sour slightly. It wasn't true, as some of the New Republic pilots thought, that Jagfell always acted as though he were superior. What was true was that he always seemed to see through deceptions, always seemed to know the truth behind what was being said to him. No one liked to have their falsehoods ignored, their images pierced.
"Record time coming on station."
The announcement jolted Jaina out of her reverie. "Deploy targets," Jaina said. "All right, Kip. Let's show Jag how Force users do it." From one of Record Time's bays streamed a series of damaged cargo containers, too badly crushed or corroded to stand up to further use. Now, each had two red target zones painted on each long side. Sensors were attached to the targets. Jaina led her flight in a loop that would bring them up at a 90-degree course to the container's path.
"I'm open, goddess."
Jaina suppressed a grimace. It was neither as close nor as effective a bond as the one between Luke and Mara. But then, she didn't want it to be. That sort of closeness led to no good. She frowned at that thought, wondering where it had come from, wondering if Kip had picked it up. But there had been no flicker of emotion from him. Doubtless he hadn't. "All right, Jag. Kip and I are going to pick and hit a target. The sensors will tell us how close together our strikes are, how well we're coordinating through the Force. For fun, I want you to see how long it takes you to punch a hole in the target directly between our two strikes."
"Consider it done."
They angled in toward one target, Jaina and Kip moving together with a precision possible only through the Force. Jag stayed with them, tucked in between and slightly behind them. Jaina picked her target, a container both tumbling and spinning on its long axis, two containers starboard of the one they were heading toward, and fired. Her quadlink lasers and Kip's burned off at what looked like exactly the same instant, hitting the red target zones of the container simultaneously, reducing the container's two ends to molten slag. A fraction of a second later, Jag's blast hit the center of the spinning mess, cleaving it in two. Not bad. Jaina consulted her comm board. 0.04 between our shots, Kip. Yours hit second. We need to get those numbers down. Jag, you were 0.26 behind Kip. Pretty good, considering you didn't know which container was going to be our target.
Actually, I did. I knew it wasn't going to be the one our course was aimed at. Given a 50-50 directional choice, you go starboard more than half the time. I figured you wouldn't choose the first target of opportunity in that direction, so I centered on the second. Of course, if I'd been wrong, it would have taken me a much bigger fraction of a second to hit the target you'd chosen.
Jaina heaved a sigh. Jag was determined to annoy her with his efforts to predict her. But she schooled her emotions once more into something like serenity and merely clicked her comlink in acknowledgement. Let's go around again, she said. The Yuuzhan Vong pilot with the absurdly human forehead and its concealing tattoos remained bowed with his arms crossed over his chest in salute until Chulkang La gestured for him to straighten. Chulkang La said, Your name?
Charat Kral.
And you are a pilot of Domain Kral and its colony on this system's most habitable world?
I am, War Master.
Do not call me War Master. My son is War Master. Charat Kral gestured toward the pilot who had accompanied him, the blameless pilot who would, if things went badly, conduct word of his death back to the Krals. That pilot brought him the recording Villip, a spongy creature nearly the size of a Yuuzhan Vong torso.
If I may.
Chulkang La gave him a curt nod. Charat Kral laid the recording Villip on the floor of the command chamber and gave it a stroke to awaken it. It flattened into a disk and then began to glow with a harsh yellow light. The light flowed up from it until it illuminated the air above it, then began coalescing into three-dimensional pictures. Charat Kral continued stroking and prodding the creature, and the pictures changed above it. First was an image of a Grashal habitat, doubtless the Kral's primary home on Borleas. Then images of infidel spacecraft performing planet-side attacks, images of nighttime spacecraft launches, images of infidel capital ships in orbit. Finally, the image settled on an aerial view of the infidel's headquarters, a tall, curved building with many outlying buildings and a burn zone that, close to the constructions, was thick with spacecraft.
This is their habitat, Charat Kral said. Their general and his staff live here. He conducts all operations from here instead of from the comparative strength and safety of one of his triangle ships. Many Jedi live here and constantly patrol the jungles around the site.
How many Jedi?
Unknown. Perhaps a dozen. The numbers slowly increase. Two of them are Luke Skywalker and Mara Jade.
What of Jaina Solo?
She is here. I think perhaps there is some change in her stature. Before, Luke Skywalker seemed to be the preeminent Jedi. Now, it appears to be her.
Continue.
The infidel's interest in this site initially puzzled me, but now I think I understand. When the Krals first occupied this world, interrogation of prisoners who once defended it revealed that it was a site where secret medical projects were conducted. New life forms were created. It was, in short, the infidel's equivalent of a shaping facility, and they defend it so fiercely that I suspect they are doing some shaping now.
Of what?
I do not know.
Charat Kral advanced the images above the villa through several sequences of spacecraft takeoffs, then slowed to show an odd-looking craft leaving the biotics facility. It did not have the smooth lines of most infidel machinery. It looked like a segment of metal pipe, tall as a human and 20 meters long, bent at the middle in a right angle, with another pipe, a meter in diameter and five long,
bisecting the angle. A twin-seat cockpit that appeared to have been liberated from a starfighter was attached to the point of the bend, facing away from the smaller pipe, and thruster engines had been mounted on the two larger portions of pipe, oriented in the same direction as the smaller pipe. The pipe ends were capped with a device that looked as though it would iris open. "There are three of these," Jarek Krall said, "and a fourth with three protrusions that extend at even identical angles, and a fourth protrusion that extends at a right angle from all of them. I have seen it, but not been able to record it. My scouts, who eavesdrop on the infidels whenever they can get close enough to do so, call them pipe fighters, and say they are part of an operation called Starlancer. They go up into space and situate themselves at very precise points in relation to one another, far apart from one another, so that the three craft like this are points of a triangle, and the fourth craft is at the center of their array. Then they communicate for several minutes. I do not know why."
"Speculate."
Jarek Krall hesitated. "I am only a pilot, not a shaper, and not one of their infidel scientists. But I had one of my advisors, who understands their mathematics better than I, analyze what they are doing. She says that if the center craft's right-angle protrusion is precisely a right angle from the triangle represented by the other three craft's positions, then it traces a course back to the Coruscant system. Perhaps it is a spy device, a communications device, or a weapon aimed at their old capital."
"Interesting." Chulkang La evaluated the pilot for a moment.
"Great one, if I may. If it is your intent now to order my death for my presumption, I ask that you order me to kill myself rather than having me executed. That way I will have achieved a great ambition to serve, even for a moment, Chulkang La."
The old Yuuzhan Vong allowed impatience to show in his expression. "Be quiet. Jarek Krall, I am advancing you to the rank of wing commander. You will perform special missions for me. One of your tasks will be the capture of Jaina Solo. You will report to me. Do you understand?"
"I do, Great One."
"My name," the man said, "is Charlotte. I'm a wraith." He was a bit over average height, with hair that was just a few degrees of color away from pure white, worn in a slightly shaggy haircut. His eyes were blue and amused. His features belonged to the sort of comic entertainer who abused his audience and got laughs from it. He wore a gaudy outfit of red pants and vest, and a sky-blue long-sleeved shirt and boots. Jaina turned to the man's companion. This being was a Gamorrean, one of the thick-bodied, snout-nosed, tusk-mouthed humanoids to be found fighting battles or doing low-complexity jobs all over the galaxy. This Gamorrean wore anonymous brown garments of human styling.
"And is this one a wraith, too?" Jaina asked, joking.
"I am," the Gamorrean answered. Jaina jumped. Many Gamorreans understood Basic, but their vocal cords were not adequate to let them speak it. The Gamorrean continued, "My name is Vort Sabinring. You can call me Piggy." There was a certain mechanical inflection to Piggy's voice that led Jaina to believe his speech was artificially augmented. That would explain things. To cover for her sudden discomfiture, she shook each of their hands in turn, then asked, "So, what are we doing today?" Char pointed through the blue-tinted window out into the jungle beyond the blackness of the kill zone. "We're going out there. We'll find a pool fed by cool underground springs. We'll bathe one another while Piggy stands guard and see what develops from there." He shrugged. "Or we can talk about psychological warfare and how it is applied to the Yuuzhan Vong."
"I'll take the psychological warfare."
He nodded. "That's pretty much what I figured. And since Piggy won't need to guard us, I expect he'll be tutoring you in small unit starfighter tactics."
You
Your work in the Hapes cluster was pretty good, Char said. The three of them were now on top of the biotics building. Pretty good, Jaina said, meaning you think it could have been better. She lay face down on a blocky duracrete protrusion, staring off into the ship berthing area of the killing field. Char, leaning with his back against a smaller protrusion housing pumping equipment, kept his attention on his data pad and nodded absently. A few meters away, Piggy lay sprawled on his back on the roof surface, hands behind his head, eyes closed, enjoying the sunlight. How? Your tricks were good ones, Char said and met her gaze. But we want the Vong to suspect not that you're somehow associated with Yunharla, not that you're a priestess or something, but that you are her. Char closed his data pad and tucked it into a pocket. Everything you do should promote that impression, even in extremely minor ways. In fact, you're doing it now. She gave him a curious look. How? A goddess does not work. And here you are, lounging around, being lazy in clear view of all the pilots and mechanics in the field below. A goddess does not fear. And here you are, in plain sight of the Yuuzhan Vong, unconcerned. A goddess is superior to mortals. And here you are, resting on a higher level than your two companions. Speaking of companions, goddesses have strange ones. Hence a Gamorrean and some idiot in nauseatingly bright colors. Char looked down at his outfit and shuddered. I get it, Jaina said. Very good, Char nodded. From now on, you're on stage every minute of every day. We're not going to say you're a goddess. We're just going to treat you as though you are one, and you're going to act accordingly.
Never ask when you can order, Piggy said.
Never work, except the work Yunharla would perform, Char said. Putting together tricks, that is.
Don't be subtle in your motions, Piggy said. Big, generous gestures, as though you were used to conducting an orchestra.
Jaina grimaced. People are going to hate me. They're going to think I've become horribly stuck up. That's right. Char gave her another smile, this one more genuine, though still definitely tinged with mockery. Luke's Coruscant expedition came together with startling speed. Iella offered him the services of the Wraiths, the most experienced intelligence cell on Borleas. Luke met Face Loren, the unit leader, and already knew Kel Tainer. Face introduced him to the other Wraiths who'd been on Coruscant when it fell. Elisar Targon was a middle-aged Deveronian with a bounce to his walk that suggested a much younger man. Balhos Arnhak was a human. He spoke with the clipped, precise accent of a Coruscant native. Piggy Sabinring was the Gamorrean pilot assigned to tutor Jaina in battle management. Bindi Drayson was a human female. Bindi is one of our two tactics experts, with Piggy, Face said, and she's been learning whatever she can about Yuuzhan Vong tactics. They'd gathered, the Wraiths and Luke, in a chamber deep within the Borleas complex, a chamber that, from its pristine condition, had not, Luke suspected, been found by the Yuuzhan Vong during their brief occupation. So, Face said, seating himself on one of the stools at the chamber's main table, let's show him what we've got. Kel, you first. The big man hefted a green cloth bag roughly the size of a man. From its open top, he pulled an object like a very shallow one-person boat. It was thick, perhaps 30 centimeters in depth for most of its length, thinning to some 10 centimeters all along the edge. Its red underside was both gummy and reflective. It took Luke a moment's study to see that a thick layer of transparent red material had been closely fitted over a smooth, silvery surface. Its top side was a dull gray, with two shoe-shaped clamps protruding from it. Kel dropped this apparatus on the table. It made a boom as it hit the surface. It had to be heavy. Then he turned his attention to Luke. This is something we've been working on for some time. We mount them in shells resembling meteorites or debris. Together with the shells, they act as individual atmospheric intrusion pods. Luke gave them a skeptical look. Meaning what, exactly? Meaning you ride them from orbit into a planet's atmosphere. In what? In the shells, I mentioned. Nothing more. The red stuff is an adhesive that affixes to the interior of the shell. The shell doesn't even have to be airtight. One person rides it in a vac suit, his feet gripped here. Kell indicated the clamps. The underside is an ablative heat shield. Slowly ablative, you understand. Layered between the heat shield and the top are a simple repulsor unit and a power cell. The repulsor keeps it angled correctly toward the planet's surface. You drop into atmosphere at the correct angle and ride it all the way down. The shell burns up from friction with the atmosphere. It's designed to keep the heat from soaking the occupant. The heat wash also conceals your true nature from most sensors, ours and theirs. In other words, you look and act just like a piece of space debris punching into the atmosphere. Until you get near the planet's surface, Face added, at which time the repulsor puts out its final effort and slows you down, so you crash quite slowly into the surface. Crash, Luke said. Quite slowly, Face repeated. And these have been successfully tested. Face glanced around, looking a bit nervous. Well, tested, sure. They've been tested. Each time they're tested, we assemble what data we can, and the next generation of pods come back just a bit more intact. We're sure they have them right this time, Bindi said. Luke shook his head. I have to say, this sounds like the worst idea in 1,000 generations of bad ideas. You haven't heard all our ideas, Bindi said. Next, Face interrupted, and nodded at Balhos. The scientist rooted around in a bag of his own. From it, he drew something that he threw atop the atmospheric intrusion unit. It looked like what would result if someone carefully removed all the skin from the head of a Yuuzhan Vong and meticulously reattached it into the shape of a head. It twitched when it hit the pod, then settled into stillness. An Ooglith masker, Luke said. Right the first time, Balhos said. I'm the inventor. Well, the developer. I was working from captured Ooglith maskers. But this one looks like a Yuuzhan Vong face. Balhos nodded. Each one is unique. They hurt like anything to remove, but you can wear them for hours or days, unlike holoshrouds where your batteries give out after a few minutes. This I like, Luke said. It'll help us move among them without being detected. Next, Face said. Bindi rooted around in her own pack. From it, she extracted a brown object made up of a thick, curved disc at the top, bent down into the approximate shape of a canopy, mounted atop a thick stem that grew thicker at the other end. It was approximately the size of a human head. Luke gave it a close look. It's some sort of fungus. We'll all be carrying them, she said. In case we get hungry? It's not a fungus, Bindi assured him. It's a droid. It looks like a type of fungus found in dank places in Coruscant's undercity, Bindi said. We're hoping that the Yuuzhan Vong won't destroy them, precisely because they look like something organic. Fungus droids. I always thought that intelligence work was supposed to be, I don't know, sophisticated and charming. Face snickered. We have a few sets of Vonduan crab armor, Bindi continued, and a few more sets of armor faked up to look like the real thing. If they get close enough to touch it, they'll know the fakes are made of manufactured materials, of course. And we have lots of Tizo worms. They're translator worms. And we have explosives, Kell said. Lots and lots of explosives. And a Jedi, Piggy said. Two Jedi, Luke corrected. Mara's going with us. All right. Let's figure out exactly how we're going to get into Coruscant orbit, where we want to land, and what our priorities are. If we're crazy enough to do this, we need to be sane enough to do it well. All around Jaina, starfighters and larger spacecraft in the Special Operations docking bay roared, whined, or rumbled into life. The sounds and vibrations cutting through her, despite the insulation provided by X-wing hull and flight suit. Normally, she found it comfortably familiar, even soothing, but just now it was distracting, intrusive. She couldn't focus. The starfighters of Jaina's own squadron were arrayed around her, with Kip and Jag situated nearest. Some of these people loved her. Others, at least, respected her. They would be hurt when she followed her brothers into death, but she had a handle on that. She decided to put them all increasingly at arm's length, so the sting would be less when she was lost to them. She could help things farther along. Kip had suggested some time ago that she become his apprentice. If she accepted, it would probably sting Mara a bit, but then Mara would be able to withdraw from her life and perhaps wouldn't feel the greater sting when Jaina died. And if she became Kip's apprentice, she could insist that he maintain the distance suitable to a master-apprentice relationship and stop expressing his personal interest in her. That left only Jag. She didn't know what he might have meant to her had things been different. She suspected that pursuing this question was one of the reasons behind his joining her squadron. But he was disciplined enough, too accustomed to loss to be drastically affected if Jaina died. He'd be all right. She settled back, a trifle calmer. Her comlink clicked. It was Kip, a direct pilot-to-pilot transmission routed through their respective astromechs.
You all right?
He asked. Just using a calming technique.
I don't think it's working. I can feel you from over here. You're in turmoil.
No, I'm not. To cut the conversation short, she clicked over to squadron frequency. Twin Sun's leader to squadron. I have four engines at full power, ready to scramble. A minute later, the go code flashed across her text display. Twin Suns was first out of the special ops docking bay, its starfighters surrounding one of the kludged, right-angle-shaped craft the defenders of Forlaeus referred to as pipe fighters. They set up on the killing field and waited for the other squadrons to deploy. Next were the rogues with their pipe fighter and the wild knights guarding theirs. Fourth was Black Moon Squadron, the renamed E-Wing Squad that had previously protected Pyria Six's moon under the command of Captain Yakan Reth. They escorted the triangle-shaped pipe fighter that was the centerpiece of the Operation Starlancer experiments. Jaina switched her comlink over to fleet frequency. This is Twin Sun's leader to control. Test fire mission is ready to launch.
Twin Suns, this is Control. Launch at will. Best of luck.
Jaina led the Twin Suns and their pipe fighter up in a gentle ascent through Borlaeus' atmosphere. The squadrons reached high planetary orbit and went their separate ways, each navigating to a different point in the Pyria system. Tam Elgren scrambled into his quarters on the shuttle and fumbled with his concealed villip. Pain made his fingers clumsy. It took several tries for him to get the device open, to stroke the villip surface itself so that it would correctly expand into the shape of his controller.
Speak,
the woman said. Jaina Solo has just taken off, Tam said. With every word, his headache eased just a bit. With her entire squadron. I was able to fling that thing, that bug, at her X-wing as she was flying out of the docking bay. It stuck to the side, as ordered.
Excellent. You're doing very well, Tam.
His controller's words of praise, her encouraging tones, made Tam feel better. He hated himself for it.
Contact me when you've had a chance to evaluate the morale of the garrison once Jaina Solo is taken,
the woman said. Then the villip inverted. He now had an idea of how the leash that had been put on him worked. When he failed to carry out his orders, the pain began. It worsened as his failure continued. When he was able to report success, it diminished. Some portion of his brain that lit up when he felt guilt, some hormone discharged into his bloodstream when he was under a specific kind of stress, triggered the headaches. He had no doubt that the pain, if allowed to grow too great, could kill him. He'd been told so. He slumped, defeated. He was a slave, and he would always be a slave. He deserved to die. He left the shuttle, head down, to return to his duties. The Twin Sun Squadron came on station in an empty region of Pyrian space. The members of the squadron broke into four shield trios, moved out from the center of their zone, while the pipe fighter remained behind, maneuvering itself to be more and more precisely at the exact mathematical point the Operation Star Lancer coordinators required of it. They directed their sensors outward to give them earliest possible notification of a Yuuzhan Vong intrusion. Occasional low-volume comments crackled up from the comm board, which was set to squadron frequency. At the four stations of the Star Lancer mission, nothing was happening. Nothing but pipe fighters setting up. And then Danny's voice over the comm.
Wild Knights here. We have incoming targets from Rimward.
A moment later, Captain Reth called in a sensor contact for Black Moon Squadron. Jaina's sensor display was still empty of unfriendlies, but three simultaneous approaches against the other units protecting the Star Lancer vehicles suggested that she'd have incoming Coral Skippers soon as well.
Star Lancer leader to squadrons. We are ready for test firing.
Jaina switched back to fleet frequency. Star Lancer leader, this is Twin Suns leader. Fire at will. Several kilometers behind her, the ends of the two larger pipe-like extrusions from the pipe fighter flared into incandescence. A bright red bar of light, a meter-thick laser beam, leapt out from each one. Instead of flaring once with a short burst of energy like a starfighter weapon system, they continued pouring out laser light. Acknowledgements came in across her comm unit, indications from two other Star Lancer triangle corner vehicles that they too had fired. The Rogues, Wild Knights, and Black Moons all reported detecting inbound squadrons, but now indicated that the squadrons were not coming in at attack speed. This seemed to be a slower, more deliberate sortie. Behind Jaina, the pipe fighter fired off its third extrusion, one that bisected the right angle.
Wild Knights engaged.
Danny Kui's voice rose in pitch.
We have two squadrons of Coral Skippers. Same here. Two squadrons.
The Black Moon leader, Captain Reth, was calmer than Danny.
Standard incoming tactics. Rogues have two complete squadrons incoming.
This was Gavin Darklighter. Jaina frowned at her sensor display. Why weren't the Yuuzhan Vong attacking her position? It didn't make sense for them to attack three of four Star Lancer positions. Then she saw it, a blip at the extreme range of her sensors. Incoming enemies, she said. Suns, shield trios, form up on me. The two Coral Skippers squadrons came laser straight toward the Twin Suns pilots. As Twin Suns broke again into four shield trios, the Coral Skippers broke into four units of six, one each to a shield trio. Jaina led her shield trio around in a wide loop that kept them ahead of their pursuers, but brought them to within firing range of the skiffs assaulting Twin Suns 7 through 9.
This is a trap.
It was Piggy's voice, and Jaina saw that the message was being routed directly to her through her astromech. None of the other pilots would be hearing it.
I recommend we return to base.
Jaina frowned. The five skiffs pursuing her shield trio were now in a wedge formation, the boldest of them well out ahead of the others. Explain that, Piggy. She reached out to Kip, feeling for a moment his hand on his X-Wing's yoke. She handled both her controls and his simultaneously, identically, and both X-Wings decelerated and gained altitude relative to their pursuers. Jag, left out of their force link, leapt ahead. Meanwhile, Piggy spoke.
listen to the comm chatter. We've been attacked by forces sophisticated enough to time simultaneous assaults on the other three squads, but they didn't jump us until the other three were fully engaged. This is a ploy designed to make sure we're pinned in place and happily hunting easy kills while they set something up.
Copy. Dana trained bursts of laser fire on the skip ahead. Her force connection with Kip slipped as she focused on Piggy's words. He was right. Starlancer 1, get out of there. Head back to base.
Copy. Starlancer 1, on our way.
Jag made a clean solo kill against one of the starboard skips. That left two damaged, one unhurt, of the six that had come against them. Jaina's sensor display showed that one of her pilots, Twin Suns 10, was drifting powerless, but 11 had reported that 10 was still alive. Then there was something else on her long-range sensors. Two large red blips arriving from opposite directions at high speed, just now slowing as they reached the vicinity of the target zone. They were the right size for Yuuzhan Vong Corvette analogs. And as Jaina watched, the blips fired off many more smaller blips, signs of a coral skipper launch. "The second wave is here," she told her squad. "Rogues, Black Moons, Wild Knights, watch out for reinforcements at your end." She received three sets of acknowledgements, but barely registered them as her wing trio scored quick kills on the undamaged coral skipper and one of the damaged ones. The last Yuuzhan Vong pilot from the original six turned away toward one of the oncoming flood of coral skipper reinforcements. None of them appeared to be pursuing the rapidly retreating Starlancer vehicle or the drifting Twin Suns 10. Jaina called for her squad to muster in the few seconds available to them. "Rogues, have they sprung the same trap at your end?"
"Negative, Twins Leader. Wild Knights just have the original squads, though resistance is stiffening. Same with Black Moon, Twins. These are interdictors, Leader."
That was Piggy's voice.
"They're not here for the Starlancers. They're here for you."
"We screwed up," Wedge said. As usual, during missions of any importance, he stood in the control chamber beside the hologram displaying the mission zone. Tycho nodded, looking glum. He didn't elaborate on Wedge's words. He didn't need to. The two of them had had the mission and the Yuuzhan Vong response plotted out in great detail. But that whole approach assumed that the Starlancer decoys would be the Yuuzhan Vong target. Instead, it appeared that Jaina Solo was the target. "How long before we can get anyone to her?" Wedge asked. Tycho shrugged. 2 minutes to get the frigate Lunar Tide to the site, and that'll just get Lunar Tide destroyed. 5 minutes for the task force now leaving Borlaeus' mass shadow." Wedge weighed the numbers, not forgetting that among them were numbers of the living crew of the vessels involved. How many lives was Jaina Solo worth? "Tell Lunar Tide to get into position to jump, but not jump until we give the order. They'll wait for the task force unless we say otherwise." Tycho nodded and turned to his comm board. With the discipline of decades, Wedge was able to conceal the way his decision tied his insides up in knots. And he prayed that he wouldn't have to tell Han and Leia that he'd doomed their daughter.
"I can get the squad out of here,"
Jag said. "Care to share the information?" Jaina asked.
"It'll take too long, Goddess. Care to trust me?"
Jaina weighed the question for part of a second and found that she did. If he said he knew how to get them out alive, then he did. "We're your wing," she said.
"You and Kip, launch dark bombs. Have them follow me at a distance of a few meters, as close as you can manage. You'll know when to drop them. Hang back. Let me lead you by a few kilometers."
Jaina felt slight confusion from Kip, a sort of question mark. She offered up a mental shrug. She armed and launched one dark bomb, then reached out to grab it with the force and hurtle it along in Jag's wake. She she dimly detected Kip's similar efforts. This was hard going. She had to fly, fire, and keep track of her dark bomb in the Force. And the latter task was one of the more difficult. As Jag was finking and juking, keeping the dark bomb tucked in right behind him was proving an almost impossible task. Jag had increased his lead to several kilometers, and up ahead loomed the bulk of a Yuuzhan Vong interdictor. Jag aimed straight in at the capital ship's bow, the node where its Dubban basals were concentrated. The Dubban basals that dragged the ship through space, that projected the voids that drank incoming damage. Finally, Jaina knew and understood Jag's plan.
"Coming up on drop point," Jag said,
his tone as indifferent as if he just ordered a meal he didn't look forward to eating.
"Three, two..."
His clawcraft began spraying laser fire in a spiral pattern, the interdictor's voids greedily sucking it all in. Jaina could see the voids concentrating there before Jag's clawcraft, anticipating the spread of his attack. Anticipating. He was so good at anticipating, predicting, that he could use the anticipation of his enemies as a weapon against them. Jaina shook her head.
"One. Drop."
Jag's clawcraft vectored again, but he continued to direct his laser fire against the flank of the interdictor. Its voids tracked, staying ahead of his lasers. Jaina yanked her dark bomb away from Jag, kept it almost on his original course, pulling it to port. Kip maneuvered his up and to starboard. A void sprang up before Kip's. But Jaina's hit, detonating in a brilliant flash mere meters from the Dubban basal node. She felt a jolt of alarm from Jag, but he did not disappear from her perceptions. She looped around the dying interdictor, spraying fire at a pair of coral skippers approaching from ahead to port, and her laser attacks were joined by those of her squad mates. Coral skippers were angling in from the sides, but none could manage an intercept course capable of catching her X-wing. She breathed a sigh of relief. Then, her breath left her. Twin Suns 3, Jag, wasn't back with them. She found him on the sensor display, back in the vicinity of the dying interdictor, at an angle that was carrying him back into the midst of the coral skippers. "Twins 3, this is Leader. What are you doing?"
"Sorry, Leader."
Jag's voice sounded pained.
"I was grazed by a singularity effect. My shields are stripped and the yank put me off course. I'll have to catch up to you later."
That was just pilot bravado. Jag had no shields, and nearly two squadrons of coral skippers were converging on him. His skills might let him last a few moments. Then he would be dead. Jaina wavered. Jag was one of her pilots. She couldn't leave him behind. Couldn't. But Kip was still in contact with her, still connected through the Force. She heard him across the comm unit.
"No, Jaina. If you go back, you've just thrown away what he did for you. You can't be captured."
"I know," she said. Her voice sounded weak to her. She watched as the closest of the coral skippers came within firing range of Jag.
"Let's go,"
Kip said. His voice was solemn, and she could feel that his regret was genuine. "Yes," she said. "Twin Suns, set course for Borlaeus. Jump when ready." Over the next few moments, the others jumped, all but her and Kip. While on the sensor screen, Jag's blip became surrounded by an increasingly thick screen of red dots. "I'm waiting for you," Jaina said.
"I'm waiting for you,"
Kip replied. "Together, then." Jaina took a deep breath. "On three. One, two, three, jump." Neither X-Wing jumped. "Blast it, Kip, go home." Jaina yanked on her yoke, sending her X-Wing in the tightest turn she could manage back toward the combat.
"Jaina, no."
Kip stayed with her.
"You can't do this. You can't save him. You can only kill yourself."
"Shut up." He wasn't dead. Jag was still flying. He wouldn't die. She would get there. She would save him.
"Jaina, this is Colonel Selchu. This transmission is scrambled and coming through your astromech. General Antilles is issuing a direct order. Do not re-enter the combat zone. Return to base. Do you understand?
Part of her did. Part of her knew that Wedge Antilles had concluded that Chag Fell was lost and was not willing to exploit even the faint chance Jaina Solo offered to save his own nephew. That's how bad the odds were.